Thanks for listening to the Revival Today podcast with Evangelist Jonathan Shuttlesworth. To stay connected, check us out on Instagram, Facebook, or online at revivaltoday.com. Now, here's Evangelist Jonathan.
Fresh back from my suspension. Let me see if I can bring on Chris Ann Hall. Let me see what this button does. Oh, somebody already has to be on the broadcast to invite them. No? There we go. Chris. There she is. Let me clean the screen. All right. Hey.
Hey.
It's a little better. All right. Sorry for the delay.
Oh, no worries. We're in the middle of an all-night prayer meeting, so I'm here until 6 in the morning.
All right, good. I just finished my service. Let's wait till we get 100 people. I just got let out of my, this is my first broadcast in a month. I got suspended for sexual solicitation of my listeners, which I have no idea how they got that out. That was good. So I'm going to try to keep that to a minimum to all the listeners tonight. I've learned my lesson. I think the algorithm I was talking about, well, I won't say what I was talking about. All right. Right at about 100. Okay, so if you don't know, no, that's a true story. Whoever wrote that in the comments, that was their reason for suspending me. So for those that are joining us, this is constitutional attorney Chris Ann Hall. And I wanted to ask her some questions, but I figured rather than ask her and just me hear it, I know a lot of other people are interested in the same thing. So you have the OSHA mandate that oral arguments started today. Now, I'll just ask all the questions that I want to know. Number one, okay. Why is the Attorney General from Ohio is arguing the case? Why did he get picked?
He's arguing against the mandates on behalf of the state.
So of Ohio.
Yeah. So the state of Ohio is opposing the mandates. And so they have submitted a complaint, a brief, and now he is before the Supreme Court defending that.
Okay. So let's say they rule like you think in Matea that I just talked to thinks, and I'm sure you're right. Let's say they uphold the OSHA vaccine mandate, which is not the outcome we'd like, by 6-3. Where does it go? Which, first of all, I mean, not everyone talked to you beforehand like I did. So you feel after listening today that two of the people that we would need to vote to strike it down are scared spitless about COVID.
Yeah, pretty much. So it was very strange because Clarence Thomas doesn't usually talk a lot during oral arguments. He is actually one that just sits back and listens. And he was one of the first to speak today. And you could hear, Jonathan, you could hear the fear of COVID in his voice, which is very strange. He's been pretty good on the defense of religious liberty and religious exemptions as far as this is concerned. He's been with Gorsuch and Alito in filing dissents whenever the rest of the court is refusing to give the injunctions and is upholding all of this stuff. But when it came time to actually support the elimination of the vaccination, now Thomas has supported the upholding of religious exemptions to the vaccination, but he's never been asked before to make a decision on whether a mandate is okay or not. So he's good with exemptions, but now this is the feeling that I get listening to his voice. Is he really is afraid of COVID and
personally, and that
he is going to side in the favor of mandates with an understanding that religious exemptions must be granted. So that's where he's going to be. I don't think he's going to go against this mandate. And then the other one is Amy Comey Barrett, who
you're a big fan of.
Well, yeah, that's to put it mildly. You know, you have a lot of people that are like, oh, I'm so disappointed with Amy Comey Barrett. No, I'm not disappointed. She's exactly who I said she was.
You said that right from the outset when everybody was singing her praises.
Yeah, yeah. No, her entire basis for her being constitutional and religiously oriented is a complete fiction. They made it all up. And all you have to do is look at her record before being a judge and know that it was all fabricated. So out from the very get-go, Alito, I was really shocked because Alito is kind of the follower guy, but he came out swinging. And Gorsuch, you can always count on him being a states' right guy. So from the get-go, he made the point clear that he believed this is a state issue. This is not a federal government issue, that OSHA should not be doing this. This should be handled at the state and local level. And then Kavanaugh, surprisingly, who usually goes with Barrett, Kavanaugh was pretty strong. Like, he was also leaning states' rights, or in the very least, not in favor of a strong mandate. But Jonathan, what was really strange, and it's those times where I wish I could have been there and asked the questions too. Every single Supreme Court justice said, well, OSHA's not mandating vaccines. They're just strongly suggesting them. We're not talking about a mandate. There's no mandate. It's a vaccine or masks and testing. Vaccine or masks and testings. And if I had had the opportunity, I would have looked the justices in the face and said, okay, if it's not about OSHA forcing a vaccine, why in the world are we here? If you believe that there's a choice between masks and vaccinations, and you believe that there is no mandate, why are we even here? Because the answer to that question is OSHA is not forthcoming with the choice. They're making these businesses believe that it's mandate, mandate, mandate. When in reality, I've read, and I've been saying this from the beginning, there is no mandate. But you have the press saying there's a mandate. You have the president saying there's a mandate. You have
the CEOs think there are.
Yeah, all the business owners think they are. Apparently, Focus on the Family now thinks there are as well. And so what I would ask the Supreme Court justices is this. Okay, fine. If there is no vaccine mandate, are you willing to go on the record in your response and say, because there is no mandate, we are not going to grant an injunction, and make it public? And I think the Supreme Court would even have the authority to admonish OSHA and the federal government and tell them, look, you have got to make it more public that there is no mandate, that there is a choice. Because the whole thing is moot the way they talk. So I don't even know why we're having the discussion.
So this guy from Ohio loses the case. Are there other cases for them to hear from different angles of the OSHA mandate, or is this the end?
There are lots of cases that have to do with the mandate. There are several on the OSHA. There are several cases on behalf of military and federal employees and federal contractors. There's a whole bunch of cases pushed in the pipe, and we're sort of just waiting for them to fall out the other side. Now, this, how the Supreme Court handles the OSHA and then the secondary cases that were heard in oral argument was the mandate for healthcare workers that comes through Medicaid, Medicare. And so how the Supreme Court handles this will be a big signal across the United States to the rest of these cases. And again, the 5-4 is the best you're going to hope for in this, because here's the thing. I had to I had, oh, my blood pressure was going crazy during these oral arguments.
I can imagine. I can imagine if you know you could argue a case better than the guy that's doing it, then it must be irritating.
Well, what was irritating was the entire argument on both sides was based on complete a laundry list of false premises. And nobody ever challenged the premises.
Oh, you know, the guy never, when the lady, when Sotomayor said there's 300,000 children in ICU, he never said anything?
No, nobody ever. And they said thousands of people are dying. They even said death rates are rising, which is patently false. Now, let me explain something that may be a little bit legal ease that could maybe help some people. When you're arguing before the Supreme Court, you're not allowed to argue thing that isn't already put into the briefs. So if they didn't put the statistics in the briefs, if they didn't put the numbers in the briefs, then technically speaking, they're not even allowed to bring them up unless something happens called opening the door. So if the Supreme Court, like Sotomayor, thousands of people, death rates are rising, Kagan and Breyer were all on this statistical bandwagon. The fact that they mention statistics legally is what we call opening the door, and now new evidence can come in. They could have brought up statistics that were just reported that afternoon because the justices opened the door to this new evidence. And so I was really disappointed. But here's the thing. This is the power of the Marxist control of the narrative. Right. I even heard Alito say this in one of his discussions, Justice Alito. These Marxists who are controlling the narrative in the media, in politics, have made people terrified to actually question what is reported as science, question any report of numbers or deaths or anything. Alito's like, I'm not saying this isn't a deadly disease. I'm not saying, he said it three times in a row, repeated himself. Listen to me, I'm repeating myself because I don't want anybody saying said something. I'm not saying this. So the Marxist mechanism of killing free speech is working even to the level of the Supreme Court. And what I think is these attorneys, the attorney for the National Federation for Independent Businesses, which they call NFIB, and then the state attorney from Ohio, right? You said Ohio. I always forget Oklahoma, Ohio. I get them mixed up in my brain.
They're all flat.
They both begin with O. And they're both not very pleasant states to go to. Great people, just geographically not so wonderful. But anyway, I think they're just terrified to bring up the statistics because they do not want to be politically and publicly ostracized and chastised for challenging the Marxist narrative. And I think that's really what happened there. But it was really, really disappointing.
Well, you're clearly right. So, okay, let's say this one gets lost. 6-3 goes against the way we would like it to go. You have like the daily, okay, let's take a specific one, like the Daily Wire, the first one that challenged it. Mm-hmm. So what would happen to that case? You know, the Daily Wire where like that Ben Shapiro owns, what happens to their case after that? Because is it the same challenge? So you just throw that one out because you already ruled on it?
Here's what the court likes to do, and this is what they've been doing for the last few years. I don't know if it's so they can ensure job security or something, but they have been doing what we call in the legal field narrowly tailoring their opinions so that they're very, very specific only to the facts of the case before them, so they can't be used as a blanket. And so what I suspect will happen, we're just really on new kind of ground. What I suspect will happen is that we will still have to hear the other cases based on the slight factual differences.
And they have better attorneys.
I don't know. I thought the state attorney, the attorney general of the state, he did a better job than the NFIB attorney, to be honest with you. I was just, but he talked less. So I didn't know what was going on there. Like I said, my blood pressure was through the roof.
Yeah, but I mean, to not challenge, like to not allow, not let them know that, about the statistics they quoted being, yes. How do you come to that case and not have that day's Omicron numbers?
I don't know. I don't know. I can't understand it. Like I said, my head was exploding. It was like one of those moments where I wished I could have just... There's a moment in history where Patrick Henry was actually in the gallery of a legal case. He wasn't an attorney in the case. And he was sitting there so frustrated with the argument. Patrick Henry stands up and goes into the courtroom and starts making the oral argument for the attorney who was really screwing it up. And so that's kind of how I felt. I was like,
the more you read about Patrick Henry, you don't know if he was a true patriot or just had a severe anger problem.
Well, there's something to that. Patrick Henry was really awesome, but he was described by several of his friends as having an injudicious zeal. So whatever he believed in his heart, he ran his mouth about, even if he was totally off the mark. So he had a boldness.
I can't fathom being like that.
Let me mention this because what people might miss is there are things that happen within cases that actually have farther reaching ramifications than the decision itself. And what Sotomayor did today, if this ends up in the final opinion, which if it goes the way that Sotomayor, Kagan, and Breyer wanted to go, it will end up in the decision because this was the whole basis for their argument. It will change the legal face of America. And here's what Sotomayor said. This was her argument. And this is where I wanted to strangle somebody. But she says, and they had such contempt for unvaccinated people and people with religious exemptions. You could hear it.
Sure.
It's like they spewed it out anytime they said it. So Sotomayor says this, and I'm going to remember it as precisely as I'm able. She says to the NFIB attorney, she says, well, you can't possibly claim that if there was a machine in a business that was spewing a hazardous material, that OSHA would not have jurisdiction over that. Therefore, we must understand that OSHA will have jurisdiction over people who are spewing hazardous material. And what you have to see is right then and there, Sotomayor said that people are property to be regulated in the eyes of the federal government. We are no different than a machine in a business.
So I didn't watch because I knew it would just irritate me. But are you telling me that when she said that, that the guy from NFIB or the attorney general from Ohio didn't say anything about how people have rights that machines don't have?
No.
See, screw them. So, okay, yeah, I
get that. What she did, Jonathan, is she resurrected a case from the 1800s called Dred Scott v. Simpson. Dred Scott is where a activist judge, Tanner, I can't remember his full name, Tanner, declared that because Dred Scott was a black man, that he was property, therefore could not be a citizen and could not have rights. So this Supreme Court in Dred Scott declared that the Constitution, which is completely patently false, the Constitution declares that black men are property and therefore, and compared Dred Scott to a cart or a donkey as property. Well, the Supreme Court overturned that case, but what Sotomayor did today was resurrected Dred Scott and applied it in her argument, declaring that the people of America are no more than a cart or a donkey
right.
or a machine.
And again, she brought that up, and the guy from Ohio never said it, never brought that up. Yeah, so don't be mad at Sotomayor or any of those people. Be mad at the two bozos that are representing the freedom to America that half-assed a legal presentation, right?
Yeah, I don't even know how you couldn't just simply erupt to the point of maybe even found in contempt. They would have probably arrested me after that statement because I would have accused her of being a Dred Scott Supreme Court attorney for comparing people to property.
Yeah, well, I know nothing about legal precedent. Dred Scott is a case, you know, if you completed high school, that's like one of the most shameful rulings in history.
Absolutely, so, it is.
It shouldn't have rung a bell for the Ohio Attorney General.
It should have rung everybody's bell. I mean, well, it should have been a moment where everybody in that room, there should have been a very awkward silence after that, because everybody in the room should have been absolutely mind-numbingly stunned that this woman made this kind of comparison.
So, okay. So this one, if this one gets lost, they're going to have to hear at least one other argument, either on the grounds of just religious exemption or the Daily Wire case is getting heard by the Supreme Court. So it's not over.
No, it's not over. And remember, the military argument is that the military is not even giving any exemptions.
Right.
They're not granting any. Well, let me take that back. They're granting medical exemptions, but they are granting no religious exemptions. My law firm has been helping dozens of people, service members across the globe, and we have not had one single religious exemption granted. And the grounds, and most of them are not even getting answered. So they're just sort of floating around in the ether somewhere. But the ones that we are finally starting to see denied are just absurd. The reasons for denial are completely absurd. Here's the irony. If you are Muslim and you want to have a beard, okay, which means you cannot wear a gas mask, you cannot wear anything that, you know, hazmat or anything that would protect you, which is standard.
It has to be sealed to your face.
It has to be sealed to your face. This is standard. You do this in basic training. You have to go through this. If you don't do this in basic training, you don't pass basic training or boot camp or any of that, right? Well, the Supreme Court and the military said that if you're a Muslim and you need to have a beard, you get a religious exemption for that. But if you're Christian and you don't want to inject this chemical made from or of aborted babies, then your body internally gets less consideration than a Muslim with a beard externally because you're a Christian.
Okay, so if this case gets lost, which it looks like it will, it's not over. The second thing I wanted to get your opinion on, I'm going to tell you my opinion. I want to hear your thoughts on it because you know this world better than me. I obviously want this thing shot down, but part of me, long term, and by long term, I mean just for another year, almost hopes it gets passed because of the massive ramifications it's going to have that's negative. It's going to, you know, if everybody has to test that won't get the vaccine, it's going to shut the supply chain down worse than it already is. If all truckers have to test and longshoremen and all that, you're going to have people out of work left and right. It's going to destroy the economy for this year. And so Biden's already low, and the Democrat Party in general's horrible approval ratings are going to go through the floor. So part of me almost wants Biden to push this and get it through and push whatever other awful ideas he has, because it's already where you're having mass, I got 10% of my battery left. We got mass retirements coming from Democrats in the House and Senate or they're going to get their tails kicked. I mean, New Jersey came down to a few thousand votes. Atlantic City voted Republican. So I feel like if this goes through, although you'd rather it shot down and get back to like how America was as quick as possible, it almost, what do you think about if this goes through where you lose all independent voters? Like you take it, if 6 months from now, you actually do have massive food disruptions in the United States, where it would be like a slaughterhouse in November 2022 and produce a supermajority in the House and Senate and be the death, you know, where the pendulum would swing as hard as the pendulum swung after Obama that produced Trump, where it would swing even harder. And there'd be an outcry for like, not just not a Democrat, but like nobody that smells like Ted Cruz. I want like, I don't care if it's Joe Rogan and his co-host from the podcast. I want a libertarian that stands for American freedom. What are your thoughts on it almost backfiring worse if Biden wins his case?
Okay, so I agree with you for a different reason, all right? I agree with you because the idols have to fall completely before the American people will get back to a constitutional republic. So let me explain how that works. Americans have put the Supreme Court on a pedestal, almost, well, I won't say almost, but really to the point of creating in them an oligarchy of rulers over America. We say things like the Supreme Court ruled. Supreme Courts don't issue rulings, they issue opinions. Kings issue rulings. Then they'll say things like, the Supreme Court, or Roe v. Wade. Roe v. Wade is the law of the land. No, Roe v. Wade is a Supreme Court opinion. It is not law. And right now, I mean, you've got people all over America praying that the Supreme Court will rescue them from this mandate. Here's right. What needs to happen, Jonathan. The American people must get educated and activated and refuse to comply regardless of what the Supreme Court says. And so right. if it all goes bad, I think it will be better because the last federal idol will fall. The first federal idol to fall was Congress. People no longer trust their congressmen. The second idol to fall is the President of the United States. When people thought that Donald Trump was going to be their savior. No president is a savior, and the President of the United States is not even created to be a savior. So now everybody's like, oh, pray the Supreme Court saves us. Pray the Supreme Court saves us. If they don't find in opposition to this mandate, the people will be left with no choice but to do what was the right thing to do from the get-go, and that's from a personal, a local, and a state level to refuse to comply with these mandates. Florida right now is working on legislation to kick OSHA out of the state. This is what we need.
That's what I wanted to ask you. So you have Florida, you have the governor of the soon-to-be governor of Virginia said that him and his attorney general are already going to deal with it in the legislature. I know Pennsylvania, not the governor, but the legislature said that they'll deal with it.
Right.
So even if it goes through and we lose the rest of the cases, the states do have the power to block OSHA, correct?
They absolutely have the power to block OSHA. Number one, in spite of what I call the federal and judicial supremacists might say, there is absolutely no constitutional authority for an OSHA within the states. If the federal government wants to have an OSHA, it can only govern over federal employees and U.S. territories. Within the state, there is no constitutional authority for OSHA. There's no constitutional authority for the FDA, the USDA, the Department of Interior, Department of Ag. All of these are unconstitutionally established agencies that resulted from an expansion of power where the Supreme Court, the federal government, actually granted the federal government more power beyond the Constitution. All of those authorities by Constitution, by the 10th Amendment, were left to the states. So not only do the states have the authority to kick out OSHA, they actually have a constitutional duty to do so.
That's awesome. Well, I got out of this broadcast exactly what I wanted to get out of the broadcast, which is I feel fine no matter what's going to happen.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's not over. You know, it's like
no. We
win the case in the Supreme Court. Great. We don't win this one. We can win the next one. We don't win that. Then you can overturn it in state legislature. And the Democrats have the worst midterm election in United States history.
Oh, absolutely.
In a demand come up for freedom. I'll tell you this. And I know, you live in Florida or Georgia?
I live in Florida. I'm here in Tampa with Dr. Rodney.
Okay. So, you know, from being down there, and then, like, I just preached in New Mexico. New Mexico has a statewide mask mandate that's a $100 fine if you don't have it, you know, that's enforceable. Mm-hmm. And I never saw, it was like being here in Pittsburgh. There's not, employees don't have masks on. I never saw any. And then Pittsburgh, you know, the NHL just took a break, hockey, because it's run out of Canada, and they took an extra long pause because of Omicron for Christmas. Then the Penguins had their first game since Omicron. So I'm thinking the stadium's going to be at like 40% and a ton of masks. Nobody with masks, stadium jammed. No matter what the Supreme Court rules, can you really override? Like as you know, America's not San Francisco, L.A., Manhattan, right, and D.C. So the country is over it. It's like when you're on social media, right, and you see people post like, I can't believe how close we are to the end. This is insane. It's like, do you live in L.A. or New York? Because if you live anywhere else, it's over. No one gives a crap. I mean, I don't see, nobody comes to church with masks on at my church without me ever saying anything. People are done. So even if the Supreme Court rules and OSHA has that power, you're not going to bulldoze the will of the American people.
No. Jonathan, have you seen our documentary, Noncompliant? Not to put you on the spot.
If I say not yet, can we still be friends?
We can still be friends.
Okay. I've not seen it yet.
Okay. So our documentary, Noncompliant, actually talks about that. And it talks about the power of the people in four words, we will not comply. And that's really the basis upon which America is built. The fact that we are governors over our government, we are not ruled by leaders. And right. So when we go through, JC and I go through this documentary and we show people not only that, number one, Romans 13 does not teach blind submission to all government, but also the Constitution itself is built on the principle that the people have the power to say no, regardless of what government says, if it's a violation of their Constitution and the violation of their rights. And so we prove that to you undeniably and systematically. And so what you're saying is actually how America was supposed to work. So that no one in government was a king to rule over the people, and the people always have the final say as the ultimate check and balance. I've been traveling all over the country too. There's nobody wearing masks in Oregon, in Washington. We just spent Northern California. There was nobody wearing masks in Northern California.
I was in Southern California, and if you weren't in LA or Palm Springs, there were no masks.
Right, right. So the people have said no. The problem is the federal government and those in power know that it's over. So they're freaking out and they're trying to exercise the last bit of force, which is government, to come after the businesses. They're trying to weaponize the businesses to do their dirty work by threatening the businesses with fines if they don't mandate these things. And here's the solution. The business owners have the right to say no and to tell OSHA to take a leap. And if OSHA tries to fine them, they say, fine me. I'm not paying it.
That's awesome. Well, people right now have tons of masks in Washington, Seattle, and suburbs. No kidding. But the country's not Washington. And you know, and if you go outside of Seattle, you won't find them. America is not nine states. It's 50 states, and it's over.
Yeah,
a lot of people need to take a trip somewhere, especially if they live in California or New York. You need I don't mean like take a trip to hell. I mean like they need to take a trip to Arizona, Pennsylvania. Mm-hmm. I have a blue Planned Parenthood governor. And they stripped his powers. They stripped his ability to make a mask mandate for schools. My daughter hasn't worn a mask to school one day this year. Mm-hmm. And all we had to do was sign a form, and they didn't even ask the reason. It's over. Right. So the biggest mess up they made was letting everything go back to normal in March. You can't give people their freedom and then yank it back 4 months later. It didn't work, and they're screwed. I feel like that it's a failure, and I feel like the more they push, the more the backlash is going to be. So it's almost better, mm-hmm. you know, like we said, for different reasons, it's almost better if they win, because let me tell you, if you start jerking with people's food in America and they're out of food and the types of food people want to eat, the Democrat Party will be squashed. You know, it'll create a hunger for somebody that makes Trump look like a moderate.
Well, it's already happening, Jonathan. You know it. I mean, you and I both travel. We are exposed to, we work with all groups, socioeconomic, racial groups all across America. I was just on a podcast with a guy named David Lowry, who runs a podcast out of Chicago, Illinois. He's a black podcaster. His whole audience is all black. And all they did, I mean, then I was on there to explain the constitutionality, sort of like I'm doing here with you. And the audience overwhelmingly is anti-Democrat, anti-mandate in Chicago, Illinois. And so the tide is turning, and I don't think it's not just a tide, it's a tidal wave. And they're not going to be able to stop it. And the more force they apply, the more resistance will come.
Let me ask you one final thing, and I'll leave you alone so you can get back to praying. Do you believe, as I do, and you're welcome to not believe it, that's why I'm asking you, that the election rigging and I'll say in case somebody with a purple crew cut from Instagram is watching, the alleged election rigging last November, that it was done to that scale as a one-off based on the extreme hatred for Trump? And then what I mean by that is, after that happened, people said, see, there'll never be a fair election in America again. But you had Youngkin, who I know, if you don't think he's the greatest thing, I understand, but he's much better than the guy he was running against. So, and he wasn't supposed to win. That was supposed to be a lock state, and it swung 30 points or whatever in the last 10 days. So I felt like when people said it's never going to be fair again if we don't get the rigged election machines under control, I feel like people were willing to commit federal felonies one time because of a hatred for Trump, all hands on deck to get him out. But that people aren't going to be willing to like keep pushing it, especially that there's going to be like further monitoring of it now in the future for all Republican or for all racist. I feel like it was like a one-time thing to get Trump out. Not that it would never be tried again in U.S. history, but it's not like they're going to rig every election to make sure the Democrat wins, because otherwise Youngkin wouldn't have won. So do you feel like, there needs to be major election reform, but they're not, you know, and the other thing is you can only push it so far. Like if a guy wins six, it's like if Biden had to run right now and he gets slaughtered, he loses like 63-37. You can't make up, you know, even the CIA in Thailand couldn't have made up a 23-point lead. So do you agree with me that it's not like over, that they're not going to like rig every election where it's not even any point in voting anymore, or disagree? I'd like to hear your thoughts.
Well, the first thing we got to realize is that election fraud is not new. I teach a whole history, the whole reason that, you know, women were initially denied their right to vote, which is interesting because women voted in America prior to the 19th Amendment. They were actually running and holding office prior to the 19th Amendment. But right around the turn of the century, it was voter fraud that caused the states to deny women the right to vote. So voter fraud's been around for a very long time. But I do agree this, and this is that they overshot their destination. I think, you know, the enemy is always, if there's one thing you can guarantee about the enemy is they're arrogant, right? And they really thought, I think their arrogance made them think that they would get away with it. And even if they didn't, that it wouldn't get the press that it got. Okay, so number one, I think their arrogance really spoiled it for them doing it again. And number two, I think you're right. I think that they thought they were going to drop a nuclear bomb, and it turned out to be a dud. And so now they're left frantically trying to figure out what to happen. And there's a telltale sign. There's a very, very liberal online news source called Vox. And right after the election, the article's not up there anymore, but JC actually found it. Right after the election, this leftist journalist was complaining that Biden was going to be the lamest duck president that they'd ever had, that this was not a win, that it was a loss because they didn't get the majority in the Senate that they wanted. They didn't get the House numbers that they got. And because they didn't win to the level that they wanted to win, they're not going to be able to push everything through. So it was a failure from every angle for these people, because number one, they know midterms historically always go against the administration that won in the previous election. And like you said, I don't care what happens with the Supreme Court, these midterm elections are going to be some of the greatest losses for the Democrat Party, I think, than they've seen in the history of voting.
Would I be wrong in saying that, let's say, worst case scenario, everybody loses their OSHA challenges, okay? It gets tied up in appeals basically till midterms. Mm-hmm. Then the midterms go hard Republican, and then it gets undone in the legislature basically before it has a chance to get any actual enforceable fines.
Well, the Supreme Court opinions are final, so there are no appeals there. It's done. What comes out of the Supreme Court is done. That's the last stop.
Let me say it like this. Other cases filed to clarify, right, like, what about religious exemption? Or what about this certain case where testing and mask can't be done by this company? Like that kind of thing.
Right. Right. Yeah. So I think, I think what people don't realize is that the wheels of the judicial system do turn very slowly. So there's not going to be a huge difference and a huge number of issues resolved unless they get pushed through. Now, these cases that we're seeing, that we saw today, are actually expedited. So it's pretty crazy. You don't see things come through this quickly. If they're smart, they will drag it out.
To the midterms, as close to the midterms as you could.
They will drag it out as close to the midterms. Because here's what. They don't want, when I say they, I mean the powers that be, the deep state and all that. They don't want the Supreme Court to overturn these. So if the Supreme Court hears all of these and upholds the mandates, that's going to mean huge losses at midterms. So they don't want that to happen. So if they're smart, they'll let them drag it off until after midterms, and then they can do what they want after that. And by that time, it'll be another 2 years before a presidential election, and the people's political attention span will be, you know, forgotten all about this, and they can spin their new narrative however it is. But here's the thing. And they talked about this in the arguments today, that if they do not overturn this mandate, there will be people leaving the workforce in large, large numbers. We already know that from the healthcare field. These are also numbers that the government is denying and hiding, and the Supreme Court was misquoting. But numbers leaving the workforce over these mandates is just huge. Okay, so here's what needs to happen, and this is part of the solution that we talk about in the documentary too. all these healthcare workers that are leaving the hospitals because they don't want to take the vaccines need to start their own healthcare facilities and not follow the vaccines. So you have all these people who are out of work. All the teachers need to join together, all the administrators, and start private schools so they don't have to do the mandates. You have healthcare workers, if as long as they don't do Medicaid and Medicare, they do private grant healthcare scholarships, then they don't have
to take government money in anything you do.
Never take government money. Never take government.
So what do you got coming up next? If somebody wants to see you live or wants to see you more, it's the first time they saw you on anything and they really liked you, where can they see you next live and where can they see you online?
Well, online, we are on YouTube, Facebook, DLive, Rumble, and Twitch Monday, Wednesday, Friday. We have a podcast called The Chris Ann Hall Show. So all you have to do is do my name. And we talk about the current events from a constitutional and principled perspective, Monday, Wednesday, Friday, for an hour, those 3 days. Live, we will be live again in February. I think our first live meeting is in Alabama, in Birmingham, at what they call Bama Carry. Which is a big gun rally. So I'll be speaking at the Bama Carry thing there. But the best way to find my live things is to go to chrisannhall.com and click on the calendar. And we have everything lined out on the calendar. You can see where I'm going to be in the future. And the movie, if anybody wants to watch the movie, it's noncompliantmovie.com.
That's awesome. I really somebody said, why don't you take government money? I'm not answering you sarcastically, but that's control.
Yeah.
If you take welfare, then they can tell you what you have to do in order to get the welfare. If you if you're a college and you take federal loan money, then in order to receive the federal loan money, you have to accept transgender students and not teach against transgender ideology and on down the line. Anytime you take government money, they're not passing it out for free or out of goodwill. It's a manipulation. You take our money and then we tell you what to do. So remember that. Never take government money.
Right.
All right. I really appreciate you coming on with me at short notice. You've set me at ease because no matter how the thing shakes out, I feel good.
I feel good about it too. Thank you for having
me. Yeah, I can tell. You do a great job. Nice talking to you again. Happy New Year.
Thank you. Happy New Year.
Bye, Chris. Sarah.